sir.
I'd like to call to order the regular session of the Berlin Mayor and Council for Monday, February 25th. As has been our tradition and practice here for many, many years, I'd like to invite everyone to join the Mayor and Council in reciting the Lord's Prayer. Our Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory forever. Amen.
Would you please join us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Our first item of tonight's agenda is the approval of the executive session minutes for the meeting of February 11th.
Motion to approve.
Okay. We have a motion by Councilmember Tindall to approve the executive session minutes. All in favor?
No. Aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Thank you. The reason for the executive session, the statement of closure under the Maryland Open Meetings Act was, one, to consult with the council to obtain legal advice on a legal matter, and second, before a contract is awarded or bids are open, to discuss a matter directly related to a negotiating strategy or the contents of a bid or proposal. A public discussion or disclosure would adversely impact the ability of the public body to participate in the competitive bidding or proposal process. Okay, now we're up to number C on our first item on the agenda, and that is approval of the regular session minutes of February 11th.
Motion to approve.
We have a motion by Councilmember Brittingham to approve the regular session minutes. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Okay. And now item 1D is the approval of the meeting minutes for the budget work session that we held last Thursday, February 21st. You have a motion to approve or make any?
So moved.
Okay. You have a motion by, Councilmember Purnell to approve the budget work session minutes. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Thank you very much. All righty. Next on our agenda, and it's our pleasure each year to welcome Michael Frankman, the president of the Atlantic General Hospital, because this is it's an annual report, but it's more about not just what's happened, but what's coming.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah. There is no test, though, right?
There is no test.
Well, Mr. Mayor and Councilman, thank you again for your support over the years, but also for giving us the opportunity to share with you what's going on at Atlantic General Hospital and keeping you up to date on what our investment in the community together is doing. And things that we're planning on doing over the next year, and again, keeping you up to date on what's happening. First of all, obviously, we're continuing with our strategic plan, our 2020 vision that we're moving forward with through the next year, and we'll be updating this over the next 12 to 18 months and coming back with probably next year we'll be sharing with you what's our beyond 2020 vision for us in the community. To share with you the financial highlights year over year, we're continuing to grow as an organization. You can see that, but as we've shared with you from time to time, the Maryland plan that we have in place and the way the Maryland primary care program and the Maryland Medicare waiver and the way the healthcare is regulated in Maryland is working toward having us do a better job of keeping people healthy in the community. And where that bears out and what we're doing is in those boxes at the bottom, you can look at when we talk about keeping people healthier, we're talking about trying to prevent avoidable admissions by getting people more care at home or care in the community so they don't get so sick that they have to come into the hospital. And you can see our admissions are down a little bit, even though our population has grown in the area. Our patient days of care are down a little bit. All that helps to bring our costs down a little bit for care, which is makes us a little more efficient. Our emergency room visits are down. And a lot of that is because if you drop down to the physician visits, you can see that our physician visits grew by about 17,000 over the year before. So we had a tremendous growth in the number of people we're seeing in our physician practices and trying to get people access to their physician practices as opposed to using the hospital and the emergency room as their only source of care. So that's a lot of the dynamics that we have working, and you'll see how that works, that plays out when I go through some of our operational things. But I wanted to show you on these numbers how that bears out in the numbers. From a community benefits standpoint, the non-compensated care or the flu clinics and things like that that we offer throughout the year, we provide about $13.5 million of uncompensated care to the community and services to the community that are healthcare related to benefit the health and wellness in the community. And in addition, we have a payroll that's over $55 million now. We have over 900 people working at the hospital in one role or another, and we now have 227 physicians on our medical staff that many of these live in the community and then working and having basically small businesses are what physician practices are about in the community and supporting the community. So what we've been focusing on and what we're doing over the next year, we set up our goals the same way every year by focusing on how are we improving the health of the population, how are we making sure that the patients have a great experience and people want to receive their health care in the community, and how do we take care of the community and make sure we have a healthier population, which reduces the cost of health care, and then we've got to take care of the people taking care of the people in our community. So how do we create an environment that's welcoming to physicians and providers and those who care for the patients in our community? And our strategic plan, our goals line up with our strategic plan in doing that, and that led to specific strategic initiatives to expand care in our community. We're in the process right now of working with the state to get an ambulatory surgery center, a certificate of need, to build a freestanding facility that's off the hospital campus that will make it more convenient for people to receive minor surgical procedures. And there are now insurance payers who will not pay for surgical procedures that can be done in an ambulatory surgery center, but if a patient wants to have them done in a hospital, their insurance won't pay for it. So there are no ambulatory surgery centers in Worcester County. So we're working with the state to provide that service so that people do not have to travel for minor procedures like simple things like, well, that's not so simple, colonoscopies, things like that are things that some insurance companies will not allow to be done in a hospital anymore. So we're having to provide those types of facilities. And then we're working on building the right kind of outpatient care services. Again, moving some things out of the hospital that don't need to be in the hospital environment. We talk about supportive care services, things like palliative care programs in the home, doing things in the home that can keep people comfortable. We have an aging population. Well, how do we deal with having the right care in the homes for people that also helps family members who may not be in the area feel comfortable with the types of care at the home? And that includes in-home monitoring where through telemedicine, there can be a direct connection and an immediate resource response to the people in the home instead of them having to drive for care or coming to the emergency room because there's an event in the middle of the night. We can directly connect with those patients who may be at high risk for that through telemedicine and keep them from coming to the hospital and deal with the issue through telemedicine. We're working on improving the training of our associates so that we can provide more jobs and advance people in healthcare careers through our training and employee retention program, which is our hope to start advancing people. They may come in without any kind of advanced or college education, just with a high school education, and they start at a entry-level position, but we can provide scholarships and training that they can advance them to nursing. We have a number of nursing scholarship students and folks in that regard. So how do we help build professions in the community? And we're working to create new location where we can co-locate more of our healthcare services and physician practices south of Ocean Pines over on Racetrack Road. And then we're also, again, trying to focus on how do we do a better job of taking care of those over the age of 65 and create facilities and create access to health care in a way that's safer for them to receive that health care, or for those who are the very elderly, how can we work with our emergency, our EMS staff and folks in the community to maybe check in on people that we know are high risk and collaborate more in our community to take care of people in their homes so that they don't get into a crisis situation. So these are all things we're working on in the community this year to continue to expand how we're taking care of people in the community and keeping them from having to come to the hospital if not necessary. And then we're also having to upgrade our facilities and bringing in, again, as we said, more physicians and more services. We're doing a lot of work around the hospital right now on, now that we're over 25 years old, a lot of the mechanical components have reached their end of life, so we're replacing the chillers and air handlers and all that stuff, which is a lot of fun. It's very disruptive and noisy and expensive, but it's something that's necessary to do in a planned fashion as opposed to doing it in an emergency fashion when it shuts down on its own. So you can see all that happening around the hospital right now. We've built a new orthopedic physician practice over on Franklin Avenue, and we're contemplating rehabilitation services. We've started in Dr. Stepsick's office right now, but we're looking at ways of possibly putting some rehabilitation services in our medical office building on our campus. To update on what's been going on with our capital campaign, you're a part of this. We've completed the women's health services and over in West Ocean City installed the 3D mammography services and really built out more of a destination for women's health services. And you can see the impact of that by looking at the numbers of women who are receiving mammograms now, screening mammograms over in West Ocean City. They know where it is now. It's more convenient. And now we feel more confident that more people are being compliant with regularly receiving mammograms, which will give us the opportunity to keep people from having an advanced breast cancer, and it's better for women's health in our community. Likewise, last summer we finished the Regional Cancer Care Center on our campus, and you can see from the impact of that, this year, the first 6 months of this year since we opened it in July compared with the same six-month period last year, we've seen 52% more patients in that facility than what we saw prior to it, and we've had over 40% more new patients coming seeking care in this community, this facility. So we're demonstrating that these are necessary services that we should have in the community and was needed, and we got there, and the patients are appreciating it. The next three things we have on the agenda are we'll be starting this summer on modernizing the second floor of the hospital. Again, we're over 25 years old now, and we need to bring it up to the 21st century appearances and kind of modern colors, one, but also modern design for facility that's electronic records and electronic facility. The way it's designed right now is the way it was designed 25 years ago. So we'll be doing that. That'll be a long, drawn out, doing it in stages around the second floor where our patient care areas are, so it's going to be something that's going to take us a while to do. The surgical services renovation will come next in line once we finish with the ambulatory surgery center. That allows us to get some of those surgeries out of the hospital. We can then redesign and resize and appropriately size the surgical services inside the hospital. And then at the end of all this, one of the things that we put at the end was the emergency department expansion. But it's understanding what's the right size of the emergency department, because you can see our numbers kind of plateauing and maybe even falling off a little bit. We don't want to overbuild for capacity. It gives us a little more time to figure out what these changes we're making in the community will do for access to care in the community, and what kind of size of the emergency department would be right then for that new environment that we have. So that will be going last after we finish these other programs. I'm going to get into a little bit of the weeds why we're doing this, but a lot of what I just talked about is improving the spaces where people receive care and creating better access points where people can receive care. And if you look at these Prescani scores, our patient satisfaction, our patient experience scores, and we look at areas where we're falling below all of our benchmark areas. And when you look at those, the area, a key area where we fall lowest is in the hospital environment, because the need to modernize facilities and how do we create spaces that are that have less noise because of the size of the hospital or maybe the way the rooms are structured. Is there a way that we can make it more of a soothing environment and also modernize that environment? So we know that our hospital environment needs to be improved for our patients. And that's also why we're provided some of the concepts of if we can provide better better types of facilities for people to receive some of their care. These are some concept drawings from our the building we're looking at over on Racetrack Road, and where we will be co-locating things like the Ambulatory Surgery Center and some of the care facilities to provide facilities that are more welcoming to seniors in particular, and how do we co-locate some of our physician practices so people can kind of have one-stop shopping and they don't have to go from place to place to place to see different physicians. Other areas that are our lower scores are areas where we talk communicating about medicines and care transitions. So how do we help people go from hospital to physician practice to maybe home health and back to the hospital? And all of those different places, it's difficult for people to be able to navigate all the different care places that they need to have, and then their medical record has to move around with them, and everybody has to know what's going on, and how do we communicate that well? And those are big challenges in healthcare, but that's where the Maryland healthcare system is trying to push us through the Maryland Primary Care Program that started this year, and through the hospital program and the requirements they put on us for communicating with our electronic medical records. So I did include some information in here for you to look at that talks about the timing, both from a federal government perspective. They're changing how physicians are going to be paid, and that's forcing people, when you look at these different, if you look up MACRA, and I just gave you a little snapshot of the timeline, but starting this year, physicians are going to be paid differently, and they're not going to get an increase in their fee schedules unless they do certain quality things, which includes you have to have meaningful use of a certified electronic health record technology. You have to have clinical practice improvement activities. You have to do these things, or you could possibly go down in how much you're being paid for healthcare services. So it's going to create a challenge in our community, too, because physicians who just don't want to deal with this stuff can stop taking Medicare patients, because this only applies to Medicare. And I'm not going to take care of Medicare patients anymore, which is a big risk for us in the community, because we've got a lot of people that are 65 and older. So if we don't have people accepting Medicare patients, that's a problem in our community. So how do we help our physicians and our medical practices stay up with these things and keep their practices modern? So and the Maryland program is giving us an avenue that we can create relationships with our physician practices in a legal fashion so that we can help them to be modernized and to keep up with all the changes that are being put on them by the federal government. And that's through these care transformation organizations where Atlantic General Hospital is now a care transformation organization as recognized by Medicare and by the state, which allows us to create relationships with physician practices, primary care practices in particular, where we can provide these care management and care coordination services and social services connectivity and pharmacists and all that stuff to support those physician practices to help with the different care navigation in the community. So it's getting more complex for us from a hospital perspective because we're having to deal in the community and help manage a lot of the care that's being provided, not just in the hospital and not just with our physician practices, but with all the physician practices in the community. But we know it can make a big impact because one of the big problems, I'll just use medication non-adherence as one of the top issues, but 50% of patients, the data is showing, are not adhering to the physician's plan of treatment at any given time, which creates up to 69% of hospital readmissions are due to non-adherence. So if we can help people do a better job with their medicine, for one example, then we can keep people out of the hospital and keep people healthier at home. And our program is showing that this medication therapy management is what MTM stands for. We have pharmacists working with patients who have a lot of medicines and complex complex treatment plans because they have lots of chronic illnesses. And we can see that more people we have on that, then we end up saving, we can save hundreds of thousands of dollars in costs for those patients just by keeping them at home, keeping them on their treatment plan, keeping them from showing back up in the emergency room. And our program, in fact, won an award, a Dedication to Excellence Award, but also won the Maryland Rural Health Practitioner Award. Our pharmacist in charge of this won a statewide award for her involvement in really making a difference in the lives of patients. So we're doing a lot of things and making a lot of changes to really, what we say in our vision, to be the leader in caring for people. And how do we take this vision of care coordination that we've had in place now, and it's really coming to life through the Maryland, the way the Maryland program is being structured and through the way the federal programs are starting to be structured, we're in the right place and we're doing the right things. It's just continuing to take time and investment and a lot of change. So I'll be happy to answer any questions you have. That's all I have to say this evening.
Does anybody have any questions? Michael?
Yes, actually, if you go back to your year-over-year comparison,
yes,
in the initial few slides, could you talk a little bit about, I mean, some of your admissions are down. I mean, mm-hmm. obviously that's the goal in some instances for billing.
Yes.
Is there a drop in the number of patients that are coming to your facility, or is it stuff that you're doing to help keep them out?
Yes, if you, admissions also include readmissions.
Right.
So if we're doing these other things like the medication therapy management and all, then your admissions numbers goes down overall because your readmissions have gone down, which is good because what you've taken care of them one time and you fix that problem one time. So that's one area where we've had one of the most dramatic declines in readmissions of all the hospitals in the state of Maryland.
That's good.
So that's good. One key area for that. The other side of that, excuse me, is that we are doing, we've done a better job of people coming into the emergency room. Instead of admitting them, we might put them in an observation status where it's called clinical decision-making status, but where the hospitalists and our inpatient team will monitor them for 12 to 24 hours. And do you really need the symptoms resolving? Have we figured out what it is? Can we just take care of it and can you go home? Or do you really need to be admitted? And a lot of those folks get admitted, but a number of those folks really didn't need to be admitted. We've resolved the issue, we figured it out, and we're sending them home within 24 hours, which prevents it from being an official admission. So there are different ways that we're addressing those issues. And again, if we have less people coming to the emergency room because we have more people seeing their physicians and we have less people getting in trouble, then that leads to less admissions. So I'd say there are a number of variables in there.
Thank you.
Causing that.
I'm just excited. I'm just excited to hear the aspirations of Atlantic General Hospital and have those plans geared toward us, our community, and our community needs. So I want to thank you for your leadership and that of your staff for having an ear to what is needed and addressing those concerns. I think it is a good thing. And what you have shared this evening for me has made me enthusiastically anxious for the future of NGH.
Listening is very important. I mean, Greg Shockley, our board chair, is here this evening also because it's important to us and for him to hear your thoughts and know what the community needs for us to do so that we're taking the right action for the community and not wasting limited resources doing things we shouldn't be doing.
So that's a good thing.
Thank you.
Somewhat like Dean, I feel excited about the
AGH because I was on the original board of directors when it first started, and it's come a long ways. Really excited.
Yes, I would have to say one thing that sometimes gets overlooked is obviously this is all very, very encouraging information about your primary reason for existing, which is improving not only the medical care but the health of the community. Mm-hmm. But it's also something that sometimes gets forgotten that in the economic revitalization of Berlin, this was one of the primary reasons we were able to, you know, start the upward, the tide started to rise. Mm-hmm. And I think that's continuing today. And while people obviously were very happy that we could come to AGH and for a variety of reasons, health reasons, it also, those people tend to come back, they tend to, you know, come uptown or go to one of the local restaurants. They other folks come to visit, and there's, you know, a lot of additional benefit. And of course, if you look at the number of doctor's offices, that's another benefit because of all the employment. And I it probably has been forgotten, and maybe it should. But when I came back after graduating at the University of Maryland in 1971, there was one doctor in Berlin, and unfortunately, in a few years after that, he died. And to think how far we've come. Mm-hmm. you know, it was back then, if you needed medical care, you had to leave Worcester County, and even for basic, simple things. So, you know, we had, and fortunately, it was one of the founders, Dr. Townsend in Ocean City. I remember he just worked because he was it. Mm-hmm. And you know, I think there's something there that probably gets taken for granted now, but we should never take for granted that for a community to be healthy in all ways, including economically, and to have good jobs, you need leadership like the one that you and AGH is providing. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Sir, thank you.
Thank you. Have a good year.
With your help, we will.
Okay. Next, we're going to have our departmental reports. First, Administrative Services Director Mary Bowen.
The only thing that I have this evening is just a reminder, the Parks Commission has their regular meeting next Tuesday at 5:30. They are pretty much working on gearing up for spring events at this point.
Does anyone have any questions for Mary? Next is Water Resources and Public Works Director Jane Kreider.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. We're all really proud of all of our employees, what they do for the town, but also many of our employees work for volunteer charitable organizations or other organizations. And I wanted to take this opportunity to give some props to Jamie Latcham. He won Firefighter of the Year for the state of Delaware. On top of being the superintendent of wastewater and stormwater. So he's just wanted to congratulate him and let the mayor and council and the citizens know.
Pretty cool.
Apparently, Jamie puts wastewater to good use on his cell phone. That's great. He's a great guy.
Yes, he's a great guy.
And that's wonderful. And please pass on our enthusiastic congratulations.
Great. Certainly.
Mayor, before you move to the next department head, I do, it's a bittersweet announcement, but I want it known that Jane has submitted her application for retirement with an effective date of June 1.
Congratulations.
Yes.
I'm going to miss you.
We will miss you, but congratulations.
How many years, Jane?
Yeah. On Saturday, it'll be 30.
30.
And I remember
and he and I remember the first time I saw Jake.
She was in a hole in front of my house.
Yep.
Digging just as hard as Marvin was.
Yeah,
probably
harder.
Probably harder.
She's been in a few holes.
Yeah.
Down my street.
I had to. I had to let them know that I could do it.
Congratulations, Jay.
That's great. We all obviously wish you very happy retirement.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
I'm sorry that you're going to be going, but you've earned it.
Who's going to supervise Morgan? I mean,
Marvin.
Yeah.
Well, Marvin's been here a lot longer than I have.
I know. But he listens to you.
Yeah.
He does.
Again, congratulations.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Members, we'll obviously have you know, appropriate fare they will, but it's not time to think about that yet, right?
Mm-hmm. I have budgets to work on.
And next is an electric utility director, Tim Lawrence.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. I have a few things to report on. We had our power plant stack testing last week. That's done every 3 years. It's required by Maryland Department of Environment. For the engines, we had tested all of them. Passed emissions. Number one, we had a little glitch with it. They have to come back and retest that engine, which is already scheduled for a return date. Then also at the Graham Avenue, the old substation on Old Ocean City Boulevard next to Burley Oaks Brewery, there was an H-frame structure from the old substation that used to be there. Delmarva Power had to work with us they had to cut their lines loose to it, and then we took ours loose and removed the H-frame structure, and we took it out. And then also at 110 Upshur Lane, I performed a home energy audit on that house there. And then also Sunrise Church, you know, we've been in the process of trying to take over the service to Sunrise at least 3 or 4 years now. We finally started moving forward with that, so we're extending the overhead line on 818, a couple of poles, and then we're going to go underground from there to where the transformer site is and install a new transformer. And then at 321 Buttercup Court, we installed and connected a new underground electric service to a house. And then we had meter reading scheduled this week.
Does anyone have any questions for Tim?
Yeah. We lost power on Middle Street.
Yes, I believe that was yesterday morning at about
12
in the morning. I was actually in Richmond at my daughter's college, and but I think what happened, a squirrel was looking for higher ground because of water, and it actually was the squirrel got on the transformer there.
Yeah. Thank you for fixing that.
The squirrel probably didn't make it.
No, the squirrel. I buried the squirrel.
Great. Yeah. Any other questions for Tim? Mm-hmm. Next is Police Chief Arnold Downing.
We'd like to just let everyone be aware that the Berlin Police, 129 Decatur Street, Berlin Police Department, had its 1 year anniversary last week, and we're all pleased and happy to be where we are. Nothing else to report.
Yeah, that's great. Any questions for the chief?
It's been a year.
Planning Director Dave Englehorn.
I have nothing further to report tonight. All right,
thank you. And Economic and Community Development Director Ivy Wells.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. Just a few things. We are getting ready for the events. I know it's only February, but we are rocking and rolling with event meetings and planning. We even started with Mayor G a Christmas committee, so we're planning next year's Christmas decor and events already. Yes, it is only February. Last week I gave testimony in Annapolis to increase what's called the Main Street Improvement Grant funding. That's the grant we received 2 years ago for the new wayfinding signage. So I gave a testimony for that last week. Hopefully we'll get some more money and then we can apply for some more grant funding. And then I also attended what was Bike Maryland Bike Symposium in Annapolis, which was very interesting. What you really don't think about when you think about bike lanes is that every bike lane in the state and in the county is different. So when you're driving, you never know if the bike lane is in the middle of the road or if it's on the shoulder. There really needs to be some consistent statewide and countywide bike lane laws. Frederick County just passed an initiative where all the bike lanes are painted green. So when you're driving in Frederick, especially downtown the city of Frederick, you know exactly where the bike lanes are because they stand out on the road. So it was really interesting to hear some of their topics of conversation and what they were trying to lobby for in Annapolis. And then today marks the 5-year anniversary Berlin was named America's coolest small town. That's all I have.
Something else today. And does anyone have any questions or Avi? Yeah, time flies when you're having fun. Well, thank you very much. Yeah, it'd be interesting to hear more about the bike lanes and things you're doing there, because that's one of the initiatives that the town is very, very much seeking to implement, along with a dozen other things. But that will be interesting, because it would be best if they had a standard before we started adding
exactly.
to our bike lanes. Okay, great. Thank you. Next, we're going to have the town administrator's report given by Managing Director Jeff Lee.
I have nothing, Mayor.
Okay, thank you very much. I just want to bring everyone up to date with last Tuesday's meeting with the Berlin Community Improvement Association, which most folks just call by its acronym BCIA. We had started in this latest series of meetings. I started meeting with them and Councilman Brittingham and Councilman Burrell back in October for discussions about the future of the multi-purpose building and that property that it sits on Flower Street. And the reason was because when we sold the property to Dollar General, the town council decided, and it was a unanimous decision, to set aside the proceeds from that sale to begin, has the seed money for a new community center in the town of Berlin. And the indication was then that we had certainly, and we still believe, there's a need in East Berlin for such a center to serve the entire community. And so we've had a number of meetings. The last one we had was January 7th, and then the BCIA, it's not only its membership and its leadership, but they reached out to people throughout the community and who have a great deal of interest in this potential transfer, where the town basically, some people may be very aware and some may not, has offered to take over the property that currently has multi-purpose building and the classrooms for the Head Start program and all the property that goes along with it that's adjacent to Flower Street. But that would be transferred at no cost to the town, and then the town will become responsible for that property, and it then would become a site, not in the distant future, but as soon as it's practical, for a new community center within our town. And the bottom line of the meeting that we had Tuesday night, because the previous late weekend, was it Friday night or Thursday night?
Friday night.
The previous Friday night, the BCIA had a large meeting at Stephen Decatur where they wanted to get the final input before getting back to the town with their decision. So after multiple meetings and outreach to many local citizens, DJ Lockwood, who's the president of BCIA, and I say about at least 8 other leadership members of the leadership of BCIA, told us that they had agreed that the transfer of property to the town of Berlin was in the best interest best public interest and to maximize the benefits to the community and to fulfill many of the goals that the BCI has always had for this property. BCI will continue to exist. This will actually give them more opportunity to provide services than they've been able to do for a long time, because they would not have that onerous burden of trying to salvage a building that is well beyond its time. The first next step will be we'll get a memorandum of understanding between BCIA and the town of Berlin. Our town attorney will be working on that, and once that memorandum of understanding is completed, then it'll come to the mayor and council for the council's approval. The town of Berlin has contracted our engineering firm that we contract with, Davis, Bowen, and Prudell, to conduct a comprehensive survey of the property. Obviously, transferring property, you want to know where the lines are exactly. And the last time that property was transferred was in 1971, and we just want to make sure everything, that the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed. Our town attorney will do the appropriate legal work to secure a clear title for the Flower Street property. And at our last mayor and council meeting 2 weeks ago, the town administrator was instructed by the council to solicit requests for proposals from qualified firms to conduct an extensive survey of Berlin citizens to determine community services that are needed in town. Now, many of them will be recreation related, but it's not exclusively recreation. The survey will be both in printed form for mass mailing and also in website format. The town of Berlin will continue to provide classroom space for the Head Start preschool program. And once the attorney has prepared an MOU for this transaction and it's been accepted by the BCIA, it will be presented to the mayor and council, and actually the actual contract then will be before the mayor and council, because you approve the MOU first. And the town attorney will collaborate with the BCIA's attorney to make sure that the written formal contract that's presented to the council is exactly what we've all agreed to. And it's been a very positive experience. We've emphasized that we're not trying to rush anybody, but I think everyone involved understands the urgency of the situation, given the steadily and if not accelerating deterioration of the multi-purpose building. I just want to report that to everyone, and I'm very hopeful. I think most of the tough decisions are behind us, and now it's more getting down to the nuts and bolts of how we make this possible and how we get the entire community to work together on it. And we'll go from there. Does anybody on the council have any comments? Or?
I have nothing.
I have one thing. To the mayor and the staff of Berlin, it is amazing to me how with.
There you go.
Amazing to me how with all you have to do, the jobs you have to do, all your duties and responsibilities, you found a time in your busy schedules to send my wife one of the loveliest flower arrangements we have ever seen. And wished her a speedy recovery. I just want you to know that your efforts are greatly appreciated. Of course by me, but especially by her. So I want to say thank you.
Great. Thank you. Thank you. What do you have, anything?
Come on. I can't beat that.
No, you can't. Do we have any comments from the public or anything that anyone wishes to present to the mayor and council? Do we have any comments or questions from the press?
Move to adjourn.
We now stand adjourned. And thank you very much for coming and for your patience.